Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 52. And as always, I have here with me Artur Sosins from Latvia that just to woke up, right? Hello, Artur.
Oh, yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah, it
good
seems
morning, good morning.
Well, over here it's not yet morning, but it will be like in 2 hours. But it's always great to record soon because at least on your side you will have some sunshine on your window. So, but we are here to talk about JavaScript and the latest happenings, things that have been happening in JavaScript world. And before my webcam disappears, like in the PHP podcast recording, we are going to start right away talking about an interesting development on the V8 engine. As you may know, the V8 engine is the engine that Google developed and powers Chrome and also Node.js, probably other projects that I don't recall, but these are the main ones. And this development, they call it a Google SoundScript. Sound, in this context, does not relate with the noise, but rather with, with a solid development, sound JavaScript implementation. And this development is to implement ways to make JavaScript faster for object-oriented programming. And there is this article here by Dr. Axel Rauschmeier. And he mentions about things that usually slow down object-oriented programming in V8. He mentions about variables and properties that can have values of any type. And then also the problem of dynamically adding and removing properties from objects, also the possibility to change the types of values, and also the possibility that arrays do not need to be a contiguous set of elements. They can have holes, like you mentioned here, and also arrays that can have elements of any type, like any other variable in JavaScript. So this SoundScript development basically consists in having a, if you can put, you can add in the beginning of your scripts, use stricter, do not confuse with use strict. It will be a stricter mode. Yeah. If you look at it, suddenly you could confuse it and think that it's the use strict, but no, it's not. It's the use stricter parameter. It's a new mode that they are introducing here. And you can put it here. Actually, they have here an example. I have an ECMAScript 6 class. So this is not a traditional JavaScript that you don't have classes. Anyway, this is just an example of how you could declare it in the stricter mode. And there are also variants that can apply to types. And basically, what this does, all these things that can do using the SoundScript is to optimize certain things that you mentioned before that you won't be able to do, and it will allow the V8 engine to optimize and run faster. Well, this is always interesting. Artur, I don't know if you have looked at this article before. It's basically a proposal to
work. It seems to be like a hack for PHP.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah, there is some parallel. It seems somewhat similar. I guess you can still have can mix code, traditional code with the stricter code, and you can also do that with hack. You can mix PHP code, traditional PHP code, with hack language code, and so there's a certain parallel. But I think for those that really need to optimize their JavaScript applications, if they follow these principles to avoid these problems, these issues that sometimes they are not really necessary, I think you can benefit from great speed enhancements. And this is quite interesting. And this ties exactly to the next topic, which is yet another article that gives you some tips to write faster JavaScript. So let's look at these tips again. Again, I mean, let's look at these new tips again. More tips than we had seen before. So it's not like we have seen these tips before. So the first tip is to they put it, don't make it me typecast. It's just to avoid type conversions. And it is interesting because let me see if they put it for all examples. They show two types of code, and they link to a page in JSPerf site that compares the types of code. And they give you results, so you can see exactly which approach is faster. So in this case,
even that point is why this article should be mentioned, because for every example there is a test case that you can try yourself and see what is faster, what is slower.
Yes, it's pretty cool, because if you are wondering why things are really faster, you can read the article, but how fast they can be, you can see these examples and see the gains that you may get from this. And the next, the first one, as I mentioned, is about the type conversions using typecasting. There are different ways of achieving things, and some ways are faster. The second one is about don't restructure objects. One thing they mention is first is to do not use the better, use the new value to assign a variable. And let's take a look at what the examples here. I don't know if this is large enough. So they mentioned here that assigning a null to an object is indeed faster than deleting the object. I think, I'm not sure, maybe this is due to garbage collection, because assigning to null garbage collection probably will happen later. I know.
I don't think garbage collection happens at all. You still have the...
Exactly, that's what I mean. Yeah, it will be postponed, because or at least will not happen right away. And also one that is probably more evident, which is the not adding properties after you create the object. I think
that's creating, really hard to escape from.
Yeah, well, if you initialize your objects with all properties that you need, you avoid that. And if you keep adding or removing properties, that probably make it slower.
The solution probably could be initializing object with all the properties you need, but no values, and then you just add values to this property.
Yeah. Yes, you just declare them and do not assign the values. I don't know if that is the case. Well, as you may see here they initialize the z variable with zero, and they gain like
50% slower.
Yeah, I don't understand quite these numbers. Oh, it's the
number per second. Yeah.
Okay, but this one is slower.
Yeah.
And okay, let's get back. The next one is string concatenation. They say that you'd rather have, and let me, where are the tests? Okay.
It could be very different, probably different browsers.
Actually, they have different variants here, so you can see which one is probably faster. Using concat and join, different ways to join strings, and it's like six ways.
It's like a 101 way to join string.
Yeah, I thought it was would be just two. So in the end, what they say is still is that it's the fastest is it's like six.
Mine says that Array prototype join is the fastest.
Which one?
Array prototype join is the fastest.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, this is a bit weird, but okay.
Yeah, but it is probably browser dependable and it would change. So there is no right answer for this one, I think.
Yeah, it's well. At least we know that there is concatenation is and of strings. Using the plus sign or the concat, it's much slower.
Yeah.
So if you are really obsessed with performance, you can come here and be convinced that you should use these tips. But
that's actually interesting. The only function that was meant to do concatenation is the slowest one doing it.
Yeah.
Like string prototype concat is the slowest one in both results.
Maybe the implementation should be optimized to avoid these problems. Yeah. Well, anyway, the next one is the there are about regular expressions. There are several methods for the regex object. So there is exec, match, and test. And okay, where is it? Where is the result? Oh, here. So. This one just says, well, this one I've seen before. I know that that text test will be the fastest. And, well, but this is only for really, really performance sensitive applications that you should use this. But it's interesting that. Match is much slower than test.
Yeah, it's like twice as slower.
Yeah, that's interesting. And they also comment about when you want to search for some text in a string, you could use index of or search. But search is regular expressions. Regular expressions is not really for constant strings, constant patterns. Yeah.
That's what we would expect.
Yeah, but still it's not that much slower as in the other examples. And let's see here. Was this the last one? No, declare and pass local scope variables. Yeah, okay. Oh, wait, I jumped here. Run tests. Yeah, just saying they're accessing global variables.
That is usually the best practice when you're reusing variable very often, then you should declare it as a global and copy to a global scope.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I usually avoid the global variables just because you may be confusing variables with names. But here it just says that it's like 8 or 9% slower passing the global variable internally. Yeah, this is interesting. Anyway, the last one. Or is this the last one? You don't need jQuery for everything.
This should be interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's like this ties to the topic that we talked about next in the last episode. Do they have a test here? Oh, using selectors, probably because inside the.
Wow.
Yeah, 99% slower, very much slower, because jQuery is a library, and internally it probably does many tests to check what code it should run, many conditions. So this is really significant. So here is the evidence. Don't use jQuery for everything. Actually,
sometimes people think, I've already included jQuery in my project, so I better use that function.
Yeah, well, exactly.
There is like two characters more to type, so it's
exactly the same. And I also have read about this in articles about developing mobile applications with actually a hybrid environment like PhoneGap, and should avoid using jQuery if you can, because that will make your application heavier. And so now, with this test that we've seen, we have the evidence that that is really significant, how much it might slow you down.
Yeah, but just to mention that we are not like diminishing jQuery.
No, no, we don't even insist on it in two consecutive shows. No, I think jQuery has saved a lot of grief to developers, especially when the browsers that were in use were not very standardized. But over the years, things become faster. I mean, implemented natively in the browsers. Modern browsers implement standard APIs that make you no longer need jQuery. And now, if you really need performance, you should avoid jQuery because it's heavier, which is natural because internally, as I mentioned, jQuery makes a lot of tests to decide which library, which implementation they use for in different browsers. Okay, and well, there was one bonus tip, which is use web workers for heavy tasks, like creating parallel processes to run tasks in the background. So this is interesting. This is yet another article of those that teach you tips that you probably were not aware. And this time it was interesting because we could see it in numbers how much faster certain approaches can be. So moving on to the next topic, there is an article about something that is new for me, at least for me, which is related with JSON Web Tokens. Let me share the screen here. So this article mentions a token-based authentication for single-page apps, and it mentions about the traditional way that applications access server resources using, for instance, cookies to identify a user that may be logged. And so they mentioned that cookies can be a great way to implement sessions to identify the user. But for security reasons, you should use this HTTPS only cookies. You should use HTTPS and then use HTTP cookies, so you can avoid eventual cross-site scripting attacks. So the by stealing cookies, cookie values, and send them to remote servers. And then they start mentioning here something that for me is new, JSON Web Tokens. Well, I did not fully read this article, did not have the time, but they mention an OAuth spec and the JWT, JSON Web Token specifications, which they already mentioned that it is dense, the specification.
It associates with Java Web Toolkit or something like that.
Yeah, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
And they mentioned that these are tokens that can be encoded in base 64 strings, and they have multiple parts, a part that identifies a sort of a header that identifies what the token is about, and the second part is, I think it's the value, the values that are passed in the tokens. And the third part is a sort of a signature that you can use to verify if the token is secure and valid.
Yeah,
well, this is... Yes, exactly. And this is as much as I could learn from this article, but I did not fully read this. One thing that I got, I think it sort of implements a way like there is in OAuth, which is scope. You can define the scope of a token when you request it, so you can restrict the APIs from a set of an APIs that you can access. So if you want to just access the data from the current user, you can just get the profile API, I mean, restrict it to the scope to that profile, to access only that profile API. So applications that need more permissions, they should change the scope. I think there is more to say about this. Maybe you can get back to this in the future, because this is interesting for not only single page web applications, but probably for mobile hybrid applications. So we'll get back to that. So moving on to the next topic, basically a set of topics that are somewhat related. First, an initiative of Joint. Joint are is actually the company that manages the development of Node.js. And they associated with several other companies like IBM, Microsoft, PayPal, Fidelity, and SAP, and the Linux Foundation to create the Node.js Foundation. This somewhat seems to be a reaction to the fork of Node.js, the so-called io.js. Because if they are creating a foundation with several well-known companies, this is sort of to leave out the development of the fork of io.js. I don't know, this is just an opinion. Maybe I'm reading too much into this. Artus, did you look into this initiative? What are your thoughts?
Well, as well as I was using Node.js for quite some time now, looking at it from a developer perspective, it still seems kind of a little immature, especially when it comes on documentations and stuff like that.
But you mean Node.js or io.js?
Node.js. But
yeah,
it has a really large community, and you can get lots of help on answers like Stack Overflow and stuff like that. So probably it is now an established environment to run your servers on, and it makes sense that they make a foundation. It's like a core of the community, and I don't know, like joining together with other larger companies that would support it and use it also. But I don't know if there would be any problems with IOJS. I think as I remember, IOJS was only developed because Node.js was too slow to adopt new changes of V8 engines and stuff like that. But as yet, I don't see any official release of IOJS. I think that even on their GitHub account, it was mentioned that you should not use it in production yet. So it's, while it's taking some pace, it's not yet usable, and that's something that we can conquer.
Yes, that's true. And this ties to the next, well, it's not really an article, it's more a live document, which is precisely about the roadmap for the IO.js. There are several plans mentioned in here. I'm not going to cover these in detail, but just to say that there is a roadmap being specified here, and you if you want to know what are the plans, you can just look here. This will be posted in the show notes for those that would like to take a look. And so despite it's not they say it's not yet recommended for use in production, they have quite solid roadmap here. Well, that's the way I see it. Arthur, what do you think about the?
Well, for now it seems more like they are showing off their philosophy that there would be no backwards incompatible changes. It would always remain backwards compatible, and the scopes that they're going to improve and stuff like that. But actually, I even saw an article comparing performance of IOJS and Node.js, and IOJS was already faster than Node.js, so they are doing something right. But well, we'll see how it will turn out.
Yeah, exactly. And and to make this story more complete, there is here yet another article. Actually, it's a message which says it is a reconciliation proposal, which is interesting because they just got divorced. The IO.js community was just formed, forking the Node.js project, and the idea is just to elaborate an article, a proposal for a collaboration between the Node.js foundation or joint or whatever you want to call it, and the IO.js community. And this is, I would say, a bit ironic because it was not many weeks ago since they forked the Node.js, and they are already trying to merge the developments.
The interesting part is that I don't think that IOJS introduced anything that would break compatibilities with Node.js. It's still a drop-in replacement, so merging should not be that difficult.
Yeah, just to ditch those slow parts of Node.js, and it's all right. Well, I don't know.
If they could do it and take the best from both worlds, then I'm all up.
Yes, I agree, because open source projects are made with the efforts of volunteers, and if you are splitting the community in two projects that could join forces and work together for a single goal, why bother splitting? It seems like somebody rage quitted the Node.js project and now is regretting, maybe not, maybe you should get back and collaborate.
Yeah, but then again, if they don't agree on how the decisions made on Node.js, it could be similar to PHP core team, that they are deciding everything, but they're doing it too slow, and others start to catching up, like hack language, like compilers and stuff like that.
Yes, that's true. That's I think you have a point there, because But in the case the PHP world, it was a bit different. That the hack language was created by Facebook, and Facebook has lots of money, and they can reinvent the wheel in much less time than all PHP core developers together, because they are volunteers. And in this case, it seems just somebody disagreed. A group of people disagreed the way that Node.js was going and created a parallel project. Anyway, this is just a proposal. It does not mean that there will really be a reconciliation. But personally, I hope so. Okay, moving on with the next topic, which is about to comment something that we mentioned last month that was going to be announced in the first days of March, which is a project called Native Script. Well, now that the project was launched officially, there is a sort of tutorial article just to tell how Native Script works. And for those that are not sure, Native Script is basically an alternative way to implement mobile applications. You would use JavaScript, and I think you can also use CSS, but there is no HTML. I mean, there is no DOM object. I mean, DOM objects to define pages, because now pages are defined using objects directly. You don't describe them in a document. So if you want to implement a simple Hello World application, this is the code that they have presented to show it how simple it can be. Well, this is simple because the application is simple. It's just an Hello World. I'm not sure if this, when you have a complex project, it will be better or worse than having a document to manipulate. I think the advantage of having a DOM, a web view, is that you can use existing JavaScript libraries that work on top of HTML documents. On the other hand, the advantage of a native script is to make it more closer to the native platform APIs. Basically, it's JavaScript code that wraps around the native objects. And the difference is that you only work with JavaScript. And I've listened a bit to a tutorial, and it seems that the JavaScript code is interpreted at the runtime. So it's not compiled into some native code. So it is not for instance, in iOS, it would not be compiled into Objective-C. In Android, it will not be compiled into Java. It's a runtime interpreter. I think that's the way it works. Well, yeah. I'm not sure if it is that interesting, but okay. What do you think,
Arthur? If that is the case, then you are not developing games. You are developing applications, so performance might not be that an issue, and it could be interpreted also.
Well, I think if it is performant for regular mobile applications, it can be as well. For games, I just think that for games, probably you need to have to work on top of dedicated libraries to simplify the whole development. Because what we see here for now is just user interface objects like buttons and frames and messages and so on.
If I may, I would like to try to compare it with Accelerator Titanium. Before, their approach was trying to wrap the objects underlying in both iOS and Android into JavaScript. And in this case, they are, I think, taking a little bit different approach. It's more like they've built a bridge between JavaScript and native language of the platform. And as you see, at least from the code, it's basically the same as you would do in native language. So it has its upsides and downsides. Upside is that you can use like documentations of native platforms, like for Android format, text format, time format, you could basically rewrite it in JavaScript and it would work. In Titanium case, you would need to learn new API to be able to do that because they're wrapped in their own objects.
Yeah.
But again, the downside is that it would be, to create a button on mobile phone, it would be completely different for Android and iOS, as I think they demonstrated it here, because they're using the native structure that they have, the classes, the class names, all the things. So there should be additional, and probably there will be additional wrapper around this to making a button instantiable on both, on all the platforms that they support.
Yes, I think that, for instance, let me share the screen again. I'm still trying to figure all things. Maybe I'm not getting all things right, but the way I see it, for instance, this UI alert view is an existing class that is that wraps around the native object, so this should be portable. I mean, I think you would not write a different code for Android.
Yes, now, you would, because on Android you don't have UI alert view class. You have Android.view.alertDialog class.
Oh, so this object is different?
Yeah.
It does not exist?
Yeah, Android does not exist.
Well, I took it that there would be a super class that would wrap the similar things.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm waiting for something like this.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was it. So if you are correct, so maybe this is not very interesting, at least for now. Maybe somebody writes some
computer.
Yeah, probably with some adapters. Well, I don't know. Well, the idea was to make it simpler, and probably is not simpler than.
Current step that you can make it in JavaScript. That's the current state of the project, but it's not yet simpler.
Well, it's still a progress. Better than do it in the JavaScript than and try to reuse parts of the code in different, because you probably have common JavaScript that is not OS specific, and you can benefit from that. That level of reuse. Well, let's wait and see, because this is a very new project and probably there will be lots of other interesting developments. Okay, and with this, let's move on to the next topic, which is to talk about the Innovation Award initiative. So we're starting with the winners of December. The nominees of December, they were voted in January, so in February the results come out, so now we can comment. Arthur, which package would you like to comment?
Okay, let me share the screen first. It should be shared, right? Okay, so the one I wanted to comment is the package that's called Observer Pattern, which was developed by Chi Huang from France. And what this package does, it manages the list of observers that observe some changes in another object. When I view the first example, then it did not make any sense to me. I don't know if you see anything, but basically those are some internal classes that they use. But when I ran the example, it actually made quite sense. It generates the list of observers that observe the changes in time class and get updated when it updates. So basically, that's the example of how it runs. I don't know why there are some internal classes that does it, but yes, there are basically the main class is the list that handles all the observers. Okay, so and
okay, so
Chihuang got also 1 year server license IP to country for this package.
That's good. And on my behalf, I'd like to comment on another package, which is unidom.js from Joseph from the United States. And he developed a package that provides an abstraction to access DOM elements. But usually the existing APIs, even in the browser, to get DOM elements, they use the exact names of the classes or identifiers. So this package provides a different alternative that allows to use regular expressions. So if you want to match elements that start with some name, you can put a regular expression and search for it in that way.
And so this is like a query selector only with regular expressions.
Exactly. That's a different alternative, and for that it was nominated. And he did not pick a prize, actually, because I tried to contact him, and so far he did not return. So, Joseph, if you are listening to this, please contact back so you can reclaim your prize. So, now, let's talk about the Innovation Award rankings. This time, we are already in 2015, and although we did not talk yet about the nominees of 2015, you can talk already about the rankings. And we only had one nominee in January. It was a low month, and so far there is not much more to say than to say that Andersdorf is leading because nobody else is participating in January. And for that, Hungary is leading also the ranking by countries. So that's all we have to say about this ranking for this month. Well, with this, we reach practically the end of this hangout. And I would like to thank you, Artus, again for coming, taking a bit of your morning. You could be on the beach taking some sun, but you prefer to stay here recording. Yes, it seems that the sun is shining on your window. You should be out there in the beach or in the swimming pool or wherever. So thank you again for coming. And on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.